Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we gavel in and begin working through our agenda, I'm very pleased to read the following proclamation. Please come forward. Hi. How are you?
Wonderful.
Good. Exceptional. I'd like Portlanders to meet. Please sit down. I'd like Portlanders to meet Shelley Sorensen. And I'm very pleased to read the following official proclamation from the mayor. Whereas Shelley Sorensen is a native Portlander and attended Portland Public Schools beginning at Chief Joseph Elementary, and graduating with honors from Woodrow Wilson High School in 1981. Whereas as a member of the Columbia River Girl Scouts for 10 years, Shelley learned the value of setting goals and serving others. And whereas Shelley designed and created a business plan for her first vending cart at age 10. And whereas in 1992, with the help of her mother and father, Shelley combined her passion for nutrition, customer service, and community building, created Shelley's Garden, a mobile food unit specializing in salads. And whereas in 1993, after expanding the menu, Shelley's Garden, featuring honkin' huge burritos, found its current home at Pioneer Courthouse Square. And whereas Shelley's Garden, featuring honkin' huge burritos, and I've always wanted to say that at City Council, serves Portlanders and visitors from all walks of life and has built relationships lasting for two decades. And whereas the local food cart industry has grown in recent years and today comprises more than 450 individual businesses, but you were amongst the first. And whereas it is with great pride that we can congratulate one of our original food carts, which have transformed the food scene in Portland and now is celebrating its 20th year. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim July 18th, 2012, to be a honkin' huge burrito day in Portland. Encourage all residents to observe this day with local food carts. Thank you very much.
I am
honored. You really are and remain you were and remain a pioneer in improving Portland's food, both in terms of its nutritional value, its taste, its accessibility, and you helped create an entire new industry that started in large part with your cart and rippled out now through the entire nation. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I've appreciated it so much, and I love being able to serve Portland. Thank you, Sam.
You betcha.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I had not had the pleasure of eating a honkin' huge burrito until I got into City Hall, and it's one of the unexpected pleasures to be able to walk down to Pioneer Courthouse Square and enjoy not only your food but also your graciousness. I don't think I've ever seen you in a grumpy mood, even when it's raining. So thank you so much for all you do for Portland.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Here, here.
Thank you so much.
So you don't have to stay. We understand you probably have other things to do, but you're welcome to stay and see how local democracy happens. And can we get a picture with you?
Please.
Yep. Everybody? All right, Carla, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed. Can you please read the title for communications, item number 821?
Okay. Request of Sarah Hobbs to address council regarding ongoing and increasing fines against Right to Dream 2 shelter.
Hi, welcome. You just need to give us your first and last name, and that clock will help you count down your 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Sarah Hobbs, and I'm here to address the issue of the ongoing fines against Right to Dream 2. Mayor Adams, I sat here in chambers last week and heard you state that the 211 referral line often has to turn away unsheltered people due to the lack of resources to meet the extreme need. As I heard that, I then wondered why it was, when there is not the resource to meet the need, there was the ongoing finding of Right to Dream 2. Upon doing some research, I learned that the city has an ongoing dispute with Michael Wright, who is the owner of the property the Right to Dream 2 is on. This morning, Commissioner Fritz heard you say that the city is not considering forgiving the fines. That's why I'm bringing it up for clarification, because I would like to hear your perspective.
That was misquoted in the Oregonian.
Okay. My concern is, Commissioner Saltzman, as Bureau of Developmental Service, as the city does not have the resource to meet the need, if there cannot be compromise between you and Mr. Wright. My concern and the concern of others is that this is caused by an ongoing dispute and people are getting caught in the middle. And that's my concern as well. And I would ask that as mayor, as head of Bureau of Developmental Services, and as the city commissioners, you please take the moral high road on addressing this issue. Thank you.
All right, can you please read the title for item number 822?
822, request of Charles B. Ormsby to address council regarding Bureau of Environmental Services projects that impact area of the Birds Hill CPO NA. Mr. Ormsby has canceled.
Okay. We will now consider the consent agenda. Are there any items to focus on in the consent agenda? Hearing none. Anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Consent agenda is approved. We have a 9:30 time certain. Can you please read the title for item number 823?
Accept report from Illegal Gun Ordinance Oversight Committee.
All right. Let me get my... In late 2010, I proposed a collection of new gun laws and two changes to the existing code to help curb the increase in gun violence that has swamped our community and swamped cities across the United States. City Council unanimously approved these laws through the Illegal Gun Ordinance on December 1st, 2010. A year and a half later, I'm pleased to have the Illegal Gun Ordinance Oversight Committee here at City Council to deliver a report on the implementation of that ordinance. I'd ask committee members and staff welcome. I welcome you here, and I'd like to, we have before us Mike Verbout, Dave Smith, Galena Esterly, and Clay Neal, and together they will, on the committee, and together today they'll give us the report. Who do I turn to first?
I'm going to start with introductions.
Mr. Neal.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I just submitted a substitute report and Exhibit A. It's just clerical changes, but you'll have that in your packets following this.
So moved. It's been moved and seconded to move the substitution. Any discussion? Carrie, can you please call the vote on the substitution that fixes some clerical errors?
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye.
Substitute approved.
Thank you. So we're here to present the Illegal Gun Ordinance Oversight Committee's report to City Council on the implementation of the Illegal Gun Ordinance, as the Mayor mentioned, which was adopted unanimously by City Council on December 1st, 2010. I'm Clay Neal. I work in the Mayor's Office on Public Safety, and we have three of the committee members here, Dave Smith, Mike Verboot, and Galena Esterly. There are two folks who are not present, who are Tama Alvarado and Roseanne Lee. We also have a number of staff who've been serving on the committee as experts and advisory members who are in the audience and will be available after the presentation to answer any questions you have that are specific to their line of work. So the illegal use of firearms is a longstanding community problem, as the mayor mentioned, both in the United States and in Portland. Each year, more than 30,000 people in the U.S. are killed by guns, and over 66,000 are injured by guns, and that's according to the Center for Disease Control. In 2011 alone in Portland, there were 18 deaths involving guns. And to combat gun violence and gun deaths, the mayor and city council pursued local policies in 2010 to limit the ability for individuals to use guns criminally. These were unanimously approved on December 1st, 2010. With the adoption of that ordinance, City Council also established this committee, the Illegal Gun Ordinance Oversight Committee, to track implementation and enforcement of the laws. The committee's role is to provide oversight on the five portions of the ordinance, which include illegal firearm use hotspots, endangering a child by allowing access to a firearm, failure to report theft or loss of a firearm, possession of a loaded firearm in a public place, and amendments to the curfew section of City Code. The oversight includes determining whether available data supports the continued designation of the hotspots, the illegal firearm use hotspots, assessing the use and need for the ordinance altogether, and making certain that there is no disparity of treatment as a result of the ordinance. Specifically, City Council asked the committee to collect and analyze data to determine whether management of the ordinance serves the safety needs of the community, is fair and equitable, and has generated improper disparate treatment. The first of these reports from the committee was delivered to City Council on August 10th, 2011, and since that time, the committee has continued to track and analyze stage one implementation, which is what we call it, of the new legislation through the Gun Task Force and partnership with the district attorneys and mayor's offices. Since its passage, the ordinance has been implemented by a small division within the police bureau, that works on the most egregious and frequent gun crimes, the gang enforcement team and the gun task force. Before implementing these code changes bureau-wide, the police bureau determined that it was important to phase in the new protocols and policies so that implementation could be finessed based on-the-ground experience and recommendations from the committee. So this is what we call stage one implementation. Stage one limited implementation to those specific group of officers who work with specific offenders, gang members, and gang affiliates who commit the most egregious gun crimes in our city. As you will hear later from the committee found this to be a pretty important context when assessing whether or not the ordinance have been successful in keeping Portlanders safe while being implemented without disparity. It's also important to note that this is a continual process. The committee will report on these ordinances so long as there is community interest in tracking the implementation of the ordinance. The report is by no means a final decision by the committee on the effectiveness or fairness of the policies, but merely captures the committee's assessment at this stage. Additionally, as a point of clarity for the report, the committee did not examine one piece of the ordinance, which is the implementation of the amended curfew section of the city code. The committee does plan to review that portion of the ordinance in its next report to council. So now for the actual report, I'll turn it over to Mike Verboot, who's the chair of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Michael Verboot, and I am the chair of the consensus-based Illegal Gun Ordinance Oversight Committee. I would like to first talk about the general consensus that the committee came to in assessing the implementation of the ordinance, and then speak more specifically about individual portions of that ordinance. In the overall assessment, overall, the committee feels that the illegal gun ordinance is helping to make Portland a safer city. We recognize that the new laws enacted through this ordinance are simply additional tools in a heavy tool belt available to law enforcement. However, through statistical and anecdotal evidence, these laws have proved useful and needed. Additionally, we have not found any evidence of disparate treatment by Portland Police in the implementation of this ordinance. This is a complicated assessment because, based simply on the numbers, it would be easy to assume that the Portland police officers were targeting minority communities with the enforcement of these new laws. The committee did not allow ourselves an easy assessment. Instead, we took a hard look at the entire context and asked very tough questions about who was impacted most by gun crimes and what this legislation intends to do. Ultimately, it's clear to the committee that Portland's African American community is disparately impacted by gun violence. Therefore, we see these new laws as potential preventative measures that help to reduce gun violence that injures or kills so many in our African American community. I'll now ask committee member Dave Smith to go into detail about three portions of the ordinance. And I will then end the committee's presentation by a discussion on the implementation of the illegal firearms use hotspots.
Good morning, I'm Dave Smith. First, I'd like to talk about endangering a child by allowing access to a firearm. This change to city code was enacted with the intention to prevent accidental shootings of youth, including suicides and negligent gun storage. Thankfully, the committee is not aware of any cases of accidental shootings of a minor in Portland since the ordinance came to pass. However, from 2000 to 2007, there were 47 suicides with a firearm and 7 accidental gun deaths of youth from birth to age 17 in Oregon, and that is far too many. It is clear to the committee that national and local statistics about the tragic consequences of gun negligence continue to validate the need for this legislation in Portland's city code. The failure to report theft or loss of a firearm. It's hard to track guns in Oregon because we do not have mandatory registration laws or background checks after the first purchase of a gun. This can become a problem when police are trying to track guns that are stolen or lost and used in crimes. This portion of the ordinance attempts to help resolve this issue. The failure to report theft or loss of a firearm portion requires that a gun owner report to the police bureau when a gun has been lost or has been or one has been a victim of a theft. In the report, the owner is required to supply the serial number of each stolen or lost firearm. There are fines associated with the failure to report a loss or theft, as well as the failure to report the serial numbers. To date, this legislation has yielded the following results. 112 guns were reported stolen or lost. 29 serial numbers were provided to the city for stolen or lost firearms. 41 individuals have failed to provide a serial number on a total of 83 guns and have been fined for each associated firearm. The committee agrees with the intention of this portion of the ordinance. For its successful implementation, it must be made more explicitly clear to the public that there are fines that result from failing to comply with this new requirement. City Council should, therefore, engage in a more comprehensive educational campaign regarding the new requirements and the associated fines. We have an additional recommendation that we believe will help with the tracking of lost or stolen firearms that can be found on page 16 of the report. Possession of a loaded firearm in a public place. The implementation of this additional charge in city code is most helpful when the police cannot establish other charges for an individual based on the evidence at hand, but suspect him of a greater crime. The misdemeanor charge helps to build up a criminal history demonstrating a person's course of conduct. This misdemeanor charge has also been used as leverage to ensure a plea deal on more serious charges, including felonies. In the end, multiple misdemeanor convictions can demonstrate a pattern of criminal behavior that supports convictions of more serious crimes when committed. Based on this anecdotal evidence, the committee assessed that this portion of the ordinance appears to be working as intended and helps to ensure that those intent upon committing gun crimes are effectively criminalized for their behavior. And now I'd like to turn this back over to Mike to discuss the hotspots.
Thanks, Stephen. The major issue that this committee looked at was the implementation of the illegal firearm use hotspots. Three original hotspots were designated in 2010 based on the historic rates of gun crimes within those boundaries. Current hotspots are downtown, the Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard corridor, and Southeast 160th and Stark. You can find maps of these hotspots in Exhibit D in your report packet. The hotspots are a preventative tool. The intention of hotspots is to allow for police to help prevent crimes by removing individuals convicted of gun crimes from locations where these gun crimes traditionally happen. The committee examined current gun crime data as well as anecdotal evidence to determine whether the designation of these hotspots continues to be warranted and whether new hotspots should be designated. You can find our analysis on pages 6 through 9 of the report. Regarding the current hotspots, the committee recommends that the current designations be maintained. Additionally, Portland City Council should work with Gresham City Council to expand the Southeast 160th and Stark hotspot past the Gresham-Portland boundary to Southeast 181st. Gun crimes know no municipal boundary, and the trend of gun violence in that area is clearly cross-jurisdictional. As mentioned, the committee explored the potential for other areas to be designated as hotspots based on current gun crime data. While a few areas of town piqued the committee's interest based on rising rates of gun crimes, we recommend continued observation of these areas to determine whether the increase in crime is an anomaly or whether it is a longer trend that would warrant hotspot designation. So stay tuned. In disparity, when the 2010 illegal gun ordinance passed, there was significant community concern about the potential for disparate impacts of these new laws on communities of color in Portland, specifically our African American community. This is the major reason that this committee was formed, to track the implementation of the hotspot exclusions and determine whether they were being implemented fairly. Based on the committee's analysis, we have concluded that there are not signs of disparity evident in the current implementation of hotspot exclusions. As mentioned above, hotspot exclusions serve the safety needs of our city by providing a preventative tool for our police. You'll note pages 9 through 13 of the report go into depth about this analysis, but I'll give a brief overview of our reasoning. First and foremost, gun violence disproportionately impacts African Americans in our community and nationwide. In the first 4 months of 2012, 30.3% of the victims in gun crimes in Portland were African American. 54% of known offenders in these crimes were also African American. This in the context of African Americans making up 6% of Portland's population. It is true that the exclusions have predominantly been issued to African Americans, 36 of the 42. However, during this first stage of implementation, the only division of the police force that enforces and issues exclusions is the gang enforcement team, which works specifically to curb gang violence through targeted enforcement. Therefore, the committee realized that demographics of the city's population as a whole may be less relevant to compare to the exclusions issued than the population demographics of violent gangs in Portland. Portland, like many other cities, is afflicted by violence related to a diverse set of gangs, including black style gangs, Latino gangs, white supremacist gangs, and Asian gangs. However, the committee received anecdotal evidence from the police bureau and street-level gang outreach workers about the weapons of choice for specific gangs in our city. In Portland, Latino gangs predominantly use knives. White gangs predominantly use baseball bats and fists. And black style gangs predominantly use firearms. While violence is not tolerable in any form, the 2010 ordinance is legislation that specifically targets gun violence and therefore will have a stronger impact on the violent activities of black style gangs. Additionally, our documented gang population in Portland is 46% African American. There are many reasons for this overrepresentation, including institutionalized racism, lack of opportunity for minority communities, and other factors as outlined in many local, regional, and national reports, including the Portland Urban League's State of Black Oregon report. This committee did not analyze these factors, but recognizes that long-term change in the disparate impact of gun crimes on African-American Portlanders will result from addressing the root causes of disparity that keeps black Oregonians at or near the bottom of every meaningful social and economic measure. In summary, the committee reflected upon the following information to conclude: we do not find disparate evidence of enforcement by Portland Police in implementation of the hotspot exclusions. We have a limited number of exclusions, 42, compared with the amount of gun crimes citywide. These exclusions result from the work in the gang enforcement team, which works exclusively on gang crimes. African Americans make up 46% of documented gang members and affiliates, and black style gangs use firearms much more frequently than other gangs. African Americans also represent a disproportionate number of offenders, 50%, and victims, 33%, of gun crimes in our city. These statistics lead the committee to state that in the current phase of implementation, we do not see disparate impacts stemming from the enforcement of this new legislation. The committee will continue to oversee the bureau-wide implementation of this ordinance. As exclusions start to result from every gun crime offender in the city, not just gang-related gun crimes, we expect to see higher diversity in individuals receiving exclusions. To ensure that this is the case, the committee worked closely with the Gun Task Force Sergeant Jamie Resch and Deputy District Attorney Eric Zimmerman to explore the option of a gun and gang conviction package. Through Deputy District Attorney Zimmerman, the committee learned that there are automatic probation packages issued to individuals convicted of crimes associated with prostitution or drugs. These packages provide our public safety system with consistent implementation of conditions of probation to avoid human error oversight. Moving forward, the committee will work with the district attorney's office to implement a new gang and gun conviction package with hotspot exclusions as a part of the conditions of probation. So I think, in conclusion, all in all, the committee feels that continued implementation of the illegal gun ordinance is warranted. The new laws are making Portland a safer city, and the potential for greater impact is imminent with the implementation of the ordinance bureau-wide. To assess data in a consistent way with previous reports and to gather enough information and data for a fully updated report, we also request that City Council allow for the committee to make annual reports to Council instead of reports every 6 months. This should not preclude additional actions by the committee in the interim, including direct reporting to members of City Council or the implementation of agreed upon recommendations. Now, the previous and current sergeants from the Gun Task Force are here to talk a bit about recovered firearms through their unit and the importance of these new laws to the Portland Police Bureau. Thank you.
And before we hear from some of the staff that you mentioned and our partners, I just want the council to know the seriousness and the commitment to being thorough and fair. And very thorough that this committee has taken its charge. And I want you to know just how much I appreciate that. We want to pursue illegal guns, the illegal use of guns, but we want to do so in a fair manner. And having your outside continuous review helps ensure that we will do exactly that. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
So Lieutenant Jamie Rush is the former sergeant of the Gun Task Force and served, as staff to the committee during the last year of analysis. And Sergeant Kathy Kent is the new Gun Task Force sergeant who it will be serving for the committee with the committee on a continual basis, as well as Lieutenant Nakamura, who has recently joined the gang enforcement team and Gun Task Force as well. There are specific recommendations relating to what was the specific recommendation that you're going to TriMet? Yeah, so there's a specific recommendation related to TriMet that you can find on the list of recommendations. We didn't cover it from the committee, but it's an interesting analysis that the committee did, and Sergeant Rush was a part of that conversation, so she would she's available to talk about it.
Thank you. One of the ideas that the committee came up with and asked for my opinion on was the implementation of TriMet exclusions in addition to hotspot zone exclusions. Their initial opinion was that if you were issued a hotspot zone exclusion, that you would also be issued a TriMet exclusion. One of the problems we had with that is if you commit a gun crime not on TriMet property, do we have the authority to then ban you from riding TriMet? And that was pretty quickly decided that we do not. So what the idea that we came up with and what we're going to explore is kind of twofold. Initially, if you are convicted or, charged with a gun crime on TriMet property, you would be given a TriMet exclusion right away. As you know, the hotspot zone exclusions are contingent upon conviction, so there is a time delay. So you are issued a hotspot zone exclusion at the time of your crime, but it doesn't take effect until conviction. So if you are issued a TriMet exclusion also at the time of your exclusion, it would take effect immediately, which would ban that person from riding TriMet for the length of time that that exclusion is for, if that makes sense. In addition to when they were talking about the package, the gang enhance or the gun enhancement package upon conviction, the committee is asking that a longer TriMet exclusion be issued as well upon conviction. So basically, it's kind of twofold, and these are only for crimes that occur on TriMet property. So if you are charged with a gun crime, at 162 and Stark, not on TriMet property, this does not take effect. This is only the committee's recommendation for gun crimes that occur on TriMet, just because of the additional safety risks it poses to people when riding TriMet if we have violent offenders on there with guns. So,
would the exceptions like going to and from work that are currently in the hotspots also apply to the TriMet exclusions?
That would probably have to be included in there. It would be very difficult to not allow someone to ride public transportation to and from work. It would be, you know, they would have to, just like they do now, prove that they are going to and from work.
Can I ask one question?
Sure.
People that are excluded from hotspot zones are only those convicted of gun-related crimes? Any other crimes?
Well, there are different hotspots. There are drug hotspots, but these that we're talking about are gun hotspot zones exclusions, yes.
So why would we make a difference with TriMet to do it when charged rather than when convicted?
So there are two. I can issue a TriMet exclusion at the time the offense occurs. If you're on TriMet property, that would exclude you from TriMet property. That exclusion varies in length depending on the crime. So what the committee is asking, right now a hotspot zone exclusion is issued, but a TriMet may not be. What they're asking is that they are issued together at the time of the offense, and that also we look at an additional TriMet exclusion upon conviction as well.
But the hotspot is based on conviction rather than on arrest.
Yeah, let me clarify. We would not, you currently have the power to exclude people based on an offense, not a conviction.
Correct.
Only on when it happens on TriMet property, which is defined by law, or TriMet system defined by law. What the committee has raised as a question is whether or not if you are convicted of a gun crime, whether that conviction means you are automatically excluded from TriMet.
Correct.
Right. So we would not change our policy, which is different than TriMet's policy. Our policy is post-conviction. TriMet's policy is post-offense.
Mm-hmm.
So we would never go backwards. I mean, I wouldn't support that.
So. Right.
So what is the gist of the recommendation again?
What they want is they want an exclusion issued at the time of offense for TriMet, which is not what we're currently doing. That's what the committee would like to see happen.
Okay.
Well, that needs more discussion then, Mayor, right?
Yeah, these are their recommendations. Today we're not acting on those recommendations.
Right. These are just recommendations.
And it's TriMet that makes that decision, not the City Council?
For the TriMet exclusions?
Yep.
Yes.
Correct. We're not the decision maker there.
Yeah, it would be simply whether or not you wanted to encourage the police officers who work with TriMet to issue those exclusions on offense.
Okay. So that will come back to City Council before any changes are taken.
Yeah, it was just their recommendation.
Got it.
We also have the current sergeant and lieutenant from the Gun Task Force here who have some sort of updated numbers about guns recovered specifically this week and on the current, can give an update on the current work of that team.
Hi.
Good morning. I was appointed to take Jamie's spot July 5th, so you'll have to excuse me. I've only been there for a week, but we've hit the ground running, I will tell you that. Since Monday, our unit, Gun Task Force, along with the gang enforcement team, recovered to date six weapons since Monday morning. One of those weapons was a aftermarket mechanism which made a Glock fully automatic, and this is a federal law, you know, federal crime. And of course, yesterday was the result of a gun task force surveillance mission on a federal affidavit to take a gang member and charge him with a federal offense. And during the course of that surveillance, we came upon a young gentleman who possessed a weapon. And from that case, we recovered another two revolvers. So as you can see, our work at the Gun Task Force, we feel, is very vital to combating violent crime in the city. Beyond that, I'm just reading the ordinance and getting accustomed to what our mission is going to be, along with Lieutenant Nakamura, who also is new to the unit. But I fully endorse all of these recommendations from the committee. I think they're very important, and the last 2 days have shown how important they are. especially juveniles with guns.
So part of the work of the task force has included not only trying to apprehend those that have the guns, but also to further up the food chain of where they got the guns, especially youth, so that we're not just we don't just exclusively deal with real life and death symptoms in this case, but also to try to find out where these illegal guns are coming from. Is that, you've talked to me about that in the past. Can you share a little bit about your efforts? It's painstaking, I know, and frankly expensive, but because there's a lot of surveillance, there's a lot, you got to be very patient building a case. You want to make sure you've got a real case. You want to talk a little bit about that work?
Well, I know we're used ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms is used to track when we get these guns, and I know that when we do recover guns, the forms that we fill out are very detailed in manufacturer, where this gun came from. I have not been involved in tracking the guns like I believe ATF has been involved in that, so I don't know if either Jamie or Lieutenant have more information on that.
Correct. When we recover a gun, our first mission is to, if it's stolen or something, is to track it back as far as we can. Not only can you charge someone with the offense of the gun, but if you can prove that it's stolen, that's an additional charge that we can prove as well. Another thing that we've looked into as far as trying to make additional charges is DNA testing on guns that we recover. It's very difficult to prove ownership of a gun if it's not found on the person. So we've looked into funding for DNA testing that will help us link guns to people as well. So that's in the process.
Thank you. What kind of DNA is it from holding the gun?
Touch DNA? Yes.
Touch DNA?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do we have any information on overall gun crimes in the city? Do we know whether we're merely moving the crimes around out of the hotspots area or how this ordinance has impacted overall gun crimes in the city?
What you'll see is when you look at the hotspots is that it does seem that some are moving. So as we enforce in certain areas, it may be moving to other areas, and that's where the committee looked at, do we need to move hotspots around? I don't know the numbers off the top of my head as how many gun crimes we've had last year versus this year. I don't know if that's in the packet or not.
Mm-hmm.
It is in the packet.
You'll see comparative maps in the end of your packet. I would say that gun crimes are generally moving out from any hotspot as a general trend, as is gang crime. And that's been covered heavily in the press. However, it's not clear whether or not that's because of the hotspot, because hotspots continue to maintain significant amount of percentages of gun crimes in the city.
Well, I appreciate the committee's thoughtful assessment of the issue of whether there are racial disparities ongoing for the next report. One thing I'd be interested in is a similarly detailed analysis of, is this ordinance helping overall, or are we just moving the crimes to different neighborhoods? Thank you. Thank you for your work.
I would like to add, the three guns that were recovered on Monday were all stolen weapons.
It's a great question. It's a really difficult question to answer since the uptick in violence is continuing in the city of Portland. Chicago, record number of gun-related violent crimes. I think Seattle is nearing a record. So it's a good question. It's really, given the nature of the crime, it's really hard to answer. But the reason, because we knew that going in and passing these ordinances, that's why we wanted to have an oversight committee that cared about these details and that recommends changes, working with the DA who decides hotspots, can recommend quickly changes to the boundaries of hotspots so that the goal is to follow, if it does move, to follow it.
I would like to say that the Bureau is looking at implementing it Bureau-wide, hopefully soon. So we should have larger numbers that would maybe show the effect in greater detail.
So just to focus on the three guns you recovered this week that were stolen, were those guns reported as stolen under?
Yes, and the serial numbers were reported. One was from Lane County, and the other ones were local, stolen out of burglaries. Oh, I'm sorry, it was four stolen guns.
Do you want to add anything, sir?
Yes, Art Nakamura, Lieutenant. Just with the Safe Summer program that the mayor was nice enough to help us at Gang Enforcement and Gun Task Force, this is a direct result of the Safe Streets program, Safe Summer program. With additional resources, we can actually do more follow-up, more surveillance. It's very time-consuming, lengthy, long hours, and with additional resources, we see additional successes in the future. So on behalf of Gang Enforcement and Gun Task Force, thank you.
Thank you all very much. How many folks have signed up to testify?
We have two people signed up. Please come on up, Dan Handelman and Becky Strauss.
Who would like to begin?
I'll do it. Good morning, Mayor Adams and Council. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. Of course, my comments are based on the report that was posted on the website. We haven't seen the substitute, so forgive any disparities. It's a little disconcerting and disappointing after hearing a great presentation of the Community Police Relations Committee just a week and a half ago about the racial profiling data, wherein there was a lot of talk and admission that perhaps institutional racism and racism and unknown racism might be the cause for the disparate numbers, that there seemed to be a lot of twisting and turning by this committee to explain why 86% of the exclusions are for African Americans. It was 77% in the first report, and albeit that there is a disparate number of people of color or African Americans specifically who are being arrested for gun crimes, that number is 52% citywide. So that 86% of the exclusions are African-American is not explained away by these anecdotal notices that are given to the committee. I'm glad somebody brought up the incident that happened with gunfire. I think that it should be a little bit more explicit. This is the first time we heard that the young man who was shot at produced a gun. We didn't know that from the news reports yesterday or from the police's own release, but we want to learn more about what happened with that and how much these situations escalate because the police themselves use guns to enforce the laws to say that using guns is wrong. This reminds me a lot of The New Jim Crow, which is a book that a lot of people are studying, about how laws are pushing more people of color into jails. I'm glad that the member of the committee mentioned something about the Urban League's report. I didn't see anything about that in this report that they put out, but that, you know, people are driven to gangs for lack of opportunity, and that people in disenfranchised communities join gangs, and that things might be getting worse because of certain laws and the targeting of certain communities. Also, in terms of the disparate numbers, 86% exclusions, and only 46% of people who are gang-affiliated in Portland, apparently, are African-American. There's a term that's used in the report called black style gangs, and I don't know if you're trying to talk about African Americans or black gangs, that's one thing, but saying black style, I don't even know what that means, and it seems borderline offensive to me. In terms of the discretion about giving out the exclusions, it should be with the judges, not the police, and certainly with 36% of gun crimes, of people who commit gun crime being white in the city, it is very surprising that there's fewer exclusions given out for white people. The committee itself apparently also is majority white, and we're talking about maybe diversifying the gang enforcement team and the gun task force to make them more represent the people who are being targeted by the law. Let's think about that with the committee as well.
Hi, welcome.
Hi. Good morning, Becky Strauss here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to share a few comments about the report. I wanted to just focus on the section related to the exclusion zone scheme for the illegal firearm use hotspots. Our primary concern about the scheme in general, as we raised in 2010 when the ordinance was being considered, is the discretion in the hands of the law enforcement officer to issue the exclusion order as opposed to the discretion in the hands of a judge. We feel that when these determinations are being made about whether or not to exclude someone, we're talking about fundamental freedoms to travel and associate freely in our society, and those should implicate our fundamental due process rights, and that role belongs with a judge. That said, that's not the ordinance that was passed. That's not the ordinance we have right now, and I'm very appreciative of the committee that's done a lot of work to keep an eye on this process over the years and evaluate whether it's keeping us safer and how it's being implemented, how is it affecting our civil liberties, and what is the demographic of the people being affected. And I really do appreciate that work. I just wanted to pull out one recommendation from the 2012 report. It does raise some interesting questions about the demographic of the individuals being affected by the exclusion orders. Without more data, I'm having a difficult time, and it seemed like the committee was also having a difficult time drawing any solid conclusions about really the cause and effect of some of this data and really taking a comprehensive view of what it all means. So we have some data. I don't think we have enough. Specifically, I'm not seeing enough information about how the officer discretion is being implemented in terms of comparisons between the people charged with gun crimes, and please correct me if I missed this data, but the people being charged with gun crimes versus those who receive exclusion orders. The recommendation about the new package through the district attorney's office raised the risk of racial bias in officers issuing the exclusion orders. I'm concerned about implementing that recommendation based on that risk when we really don't have enough information to see whether there is racial bias being used. How is that discretion being exercised by the officers? So again, we would like to see that discretion in the hands of a judge. It provides more safeguards, but absent evidence of racial bias that law enforcement officers are being discriminatory in the issuance of the exclusion orders, we're very wary to implement a recommendation that would increase the use and implementation of the exclusion orders more on an automatic basis than on one that allows for a more individualized determination of what variances might apply. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Carla, can you please call the vote? Oh, move to accept the report.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to accept the report?
Saltzman?
Well, I appreciate the work of our police, district attorneys, ATF, our Citizen Oversight Committee, and the mayor for his leadership in this. These are not easy issues. But I think what underscores all this is people are shooting at each other and people are being killed. And it's because of guns. And we need to do more to get guns out of the hands of young people and old people, older people as well. And it's not easy, given you know, the strong pro-gun lobbies that exist in this Congress and this state. It's very hard to get anything done. I know one of the recommendations is a voluntary registration by gun owners. I would rate that as having zero chance of success. So it's, you know, we have to weave a delicate path, and we also have to be respectful of people's civil liberties. And I think this council has been pretty diligent about modifying our drug-free zone exclusions in light of the need to have convictions before an exclusion takes effect. So I'm pleased with this report, and I hope our people and our police officers and everybody will be more successful in getting guns out of the hands of criminals. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you very much to the committee for your diligent work on this. Galena Avedon Easterly, Mike Verbout, Roseanne Lee, who's now retired from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement but is still volunteering on this committee, Timo Alvarado, and Dave Smith. Obviously, a lot of work went into preparing this report and a very thoughtful analysis. I appreciated it. It certainly gives us more fodder for discussion, and I think that's very helpful to the public process and to teasing out the issues and values in this complicated challenge that we face together as a community. I am interested in the next report to have the look at, is this helping citywide? And I am confident that the committee is well up to that task. Thank you, Mayor Adams, for looking into this and proposing solutions and coming back with reports. I think that's really important. Thanks to the police officers also for your diligence on this. And I agree that it needs to be continued to be based on convictions rather than on arrests. Thank you for your work. Aye.
Fish.
I want to associate with the remarks of my colleagues already and just add one other dimension to this problem. In the last 6 months, we've had a number of shootings that have occurred at recreation facilities and in parks. And there are steps we can take to try to enhance the safety of families and children in our parks, but we cannot have a police officer or a ranger in every play structure, in every recreational facility, and in every park. And the reckless behavior that we're seeing is going to lead to more deaths of completely innocent people who are caught in the crossfire. And that ought to just outrage people. And Commissioner Saltzman and I and others have already been to too many funerals of children in that circumstance. But when people engage in this kind of reckless, illegal behavior in a public setting, like at a rec center, where the consequence could be a child dying in the crossfire, it's just outrageous. And I agree with what my colleagues have said about the difficult balancing, and I appreciate the testimony today, and we've got to get that right. But we also have an obligation to protect people's safety. And I am very fearful, given the recklessness we're seeing this summer, that despite the mayor's great efforts with Operation Safe Summer and bringing all the parties together, that someone, an innocent life will be taken, and we have to do all we can to prevent that from happening. Thanks to the committee for their work and for the presentation today. Aye.
Adams?
Well, I want to restate my thanks to the committee who has, this is the first, I think one of the best examples of the kind of rigorous oversight of the law enforcement prosecution functions, and specifically looking at any intentional, unintentional, overt or systemic racism. I really appreciate that. And that in this city, where it, among some, it still remains difficult to talk about race, that you've taken that on, and that you've looked at, as well you should, not only the rights of those that have been accused, that those have been through the criminal justice process, but also the victims and the profile of the community that is being, communities that are being disproportionately impacted. My thanks to the Police Bureau and the Illegal Gun Task Force and the Gang Violence Task Force. My thanks to the District Attorney, our federal partners. This is an awful scourge on the city, but you're making headway, and we have a lot more work to do. So thank you. Aye. Report approved. Can you please, what does that lead us to? Can you please read the item number 829?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County to provide outpatient treatment and supportive housing to chronic offenders identified by the services coordination team.
Let's see, who's here to testify on this matter? I mean staff, Dan. Staff. Is any staff here? Oh, are you here to testify?
My name is Bob Douglas. I'm the Business Operations Manager for Portland Police Bureau, and I can answer any questions regarding this item. It's an element of the service coordination team. This particular item, 829, relates to subcontracted services through Multnomah County that are associated with supporting outpatient treatment and supportive housing.
Okay. One question, Mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Just want a point of clarification. On the notes that we have on disposition, it says that the funding is adequate for 8 months of programming. And I guess